It's a numbers game with your host, Gil Alexander.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Hour number two of a numbers game right here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, SiriusXM Channel 204, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, FUBO, Sling and Game Plus. How you doing, Jason? It's Gil Alexander. You good?
Pretty good.
Las Vegas Chris going to join us later this hour. Multiple contest winner here in Vegas over the course of the last decade. He will be in here, among other things, to give us his thoughts on the wonderful contest that is Circa Survivor and what he feels some rule changes ought to be next year.
How many entries does he have?
I do not know the answer to that question. That is why he is here, and I will ask
him. Can't wait to ask him.
Maybe he has zero. I don't even know if he's in it. Maybe he has five. I don't know. We'll find out from Las Vegas Chris. Always look forward to seeing him. We will not talk politics with Las Vegas Chris because that could get spicy. So we will not do that.
There's nothing going on anyway.
Yeah, there's nothing going on. We will do that later on the show. First, though, as is the case each and every Tuesday at this time, he is kind enough to join us from somewhere where we're all jealous of down in Long Beach, California. Maybe in front of the fish tank. Maybe outside. I don't know. It's Whale_Capper. Half of the Deep Dive podcast team. He works. He provides stuff for VSiN as well. Rankings every week. It's Drew Densick. How you doing, Drew?
I'm doing well, man. I wanted to be outside today. I had a great shot lined up. It is a beautiful day out, but my neighbors are chainsawing their tree. So,
oh, they are.
Not to be. Already one bad beat on the day, and it's only a Tuesday, so not great.
Do they not know that this is your weekly spot on the numbers game? Can you tell them?
They're gonna find out later today.
Hey guys, I do this thing on Tuesdays. Maybe chainsaw.
Yeah.
Another time.
Any other day. Other day is fine. Really.
Let's start with the Monday night game, which is our, I guess, the natural thing to do when we get together. I talked about it last hour, and I had the Bucks. The Bucks pre-flop. I had a Bucks in game on the money line, and down 7-0 when they went up 14-7. I was like, oh, look how smart I am. But I was being honest last hour when I said, I think that could have been worse. Like, I think a couple things go the other way. I think the Rams could have blown them out of the building. How did you see it?
100%. Yeah. Rams put the Bucks back in the game with the sloppy play of Jared Goff in the second half. I mean, realistically, that was one way action for the Rams after that 14-7 lead. Tom Brady was terrible. Terrible. I don't even know how many more times we need to see it now, but four primetime games this season for the Bucks, he's been awful. The primetime games down the home stretch last year for the Patriots, he was awful. The playoff game against the Titans, his last ever game starting in Foxborough, was an absolute atrocity. This may just be you know, primetime Brady at this point in his career. At this
he's
age,
he's 43. No shame, right?
He's older, right? Yeah. But even beyond that, like, Brady deserves the lion's share of the criticism for yesterday's performance. No question about it. But Bruce Arians and Byron Leftwich and what they're doing offensively, as far as a scheme and a plan, is makes you want to pull your hair out. Why are we targeting Brate? Why are we targeting Fournette? Why are we targeting Ronald Jones in the passing game? You have three of the most dynamic receivers across the entire NFL on the field every snap. It feels like they're completely misutilizing Godwin and Evans, and it makes me want to pull my hair out. I can't watch these guys. And yet all of this, you know, talk, all of this, shade on Brady and the Bucks, and I'm looking at this line for Kansas City next week, and I can't help myself but feel like it's a little bit generous. It's asking to bet the Bucks again because they have the weapons that match up well against the Kansas City defense, and Kansas City could play them tough and probably win. But this is going to be another tough contest, and I don't know if I have the stomach to go back to for another helping of Buccaneers at this point.
Yeah.
I may just let this one go by. But surely any hope that this team is going to find their form this regular season and be a threat in the playoffs, in the playoff picture in the NFC, I think is fleeting. If they had gotten the number one wild card spot and they draw like the worst team that's going to ever make the playoffs in modern history, whoever comes out of that NFC East, then maybe you could talk me into, okay, well, they could make some noise. But they're not even in the top spot in the wild card. In fact, they are going to fight for the sixth or seventh slot at this point, which is wild. So it's been an underachievement here for the Bucks, and they've had a tough schedule. They have some easy games coming up, but it is also, I think, long since we have seen the best of Tom Brady, and that's being proven week in, week out, especially in prime time.
Skill Alexander, Drew Dinsick. This is a numbers game right here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, Sirius XM Channel 204, VSiN.com, the VSiN app. Fubo, Sling and Game Plus, talking Rams and Bucks last night. We'll talk up to, or I should say a little more, week 11 up to and get to Drew's picks for week 12 that he's already made. There was also that weird stretch last night, now that you mention it, because I just said earlier when I was talking college football and Pete Futak had brought up Jameis randomly, I said, I'm not sure the Bucks would have been worse with Jameis last night. They might have been better. But there was that weird stretch, now that you mention it, with play calling. Do you remember, like, so Kupp and Woods were getting all of the play for the Rams. Sean McVay was brilliantly doing everything underneath. And then it got to the point where I thought there was that one drive in the second half where it was like, oh, yeah, you're doing that? Watch what we do. And Brady kept feeding Antonio Brown, like, on five straight plays. I was like, what's happening here? It's like a tit-for-tat kind of a drive now? It was very odd.
Yes, I think it probably speaks to a little bit of sort of they're lacking vision, they're lacking leadership in the offensive side of the ball in the locker room, in my opinion. And I'm not a Byron Leftwich guy, and Bruce Arians, he's a guy you like, right? He says all the right things in front of the camera. He's very honest. It's very unusual for a coach to be as transparent and as forthright as Bruce Arians is. So he gets a lot of credit from, those who follow the sport, but he's really forcing a very, not the perfect system on Tom Brady. And I don't know how much more evidence he needs to see that they need to switch things up. Like, realistically, you lose Ali Marpet now for three straight games.
Yeah.
And you shuffle around your offensive line and you get a little bit better protection against one of the worst D lines in football against Carolina last week. And this week, you're going up against one of the best D lines in football and the best defensive player in the game. And rather than, coming up with Brady thrives when we get the ball out of his hands quickly. He's proven this now for years and years and years. Well, no, we'll let these late developing plays go and see if he can hit Mike Evans down the sidelines, 30, 40 yards, a throw that he has not been able to make really with consistency all season. And, you have all of these late developing plays that, you're getting pressure up the middle, which is Brady's kryptonite. So, Arians and Leftwich really deserve a lot of scrutiny in the way that they're coordinating this offense and really not playing to Brady's strengths. And it's very frustrating, especially with all the weapons that they have in the passing game.
Okay, so Drew, you do a weekly power rankings column for VSiN every week. Is that point spread weekly, by the way, specifically?
Point spread. Yeah, I believe so. It goes out
on Wednesday.
Goes out every week.
Yeah, so it comes out the day after we do our spot. So I don't usually want to give away what you have because I want people to get point spread weekly, but let's just do it this one time. Where does this put the Bucks? Like, where do you rank them? Where do you rank the Rams? Because I had the Saints and the Chiefs before the season being the Super Bowl, but after last night, I'm sort of like, are the Rams the best team in the NFC? They might be.
Well, man, you want to get into more coaching talk. Sean McVay, why didn't the Rams put that game away more convincingly?
I agree.
Why didn't they?
Yes.
I mean, Sean McVay deserves some scrutiny for that. His conservative play calling, some of the decisions to go for field goals instead of go for it on fourth down.
Yes.
And realistically, let's talk about the last scoring drive of the game for the Rams. They drove that field effortlessly. They get that long completion to Cooper Kupp, puts them inside the red zone. And what do? They run three of the most conservative plays you ever wanted to see. The first one was a pass and it didn't take time off the clock. So if your goal is, okay, well, we're going to milk the clock here and score a field goal, but oh, by the way, we're going to give the Bucks 2 minutes on the clock. Like, what kind of decision making is that? He completely panicked in that moment.
Ran
and
on
the
third and eight. Yes.
What was that?
Yes.
What are you doing?
That's what I was saying
what
earlier.
What are you doing?
And that other drive in the third quarter on the field goal that Gay missed, third and one. You know what? This has been too easy. Let's just run it into Ndamukong Suh. Let's do this.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm with you.
And it's not like they don't know who Adomnikin Sue was. He used to be on that team. Yes. They know how tough he is. They know how important familiar. He is to the run stop.
Yeah, it was weird.
Oh, man. Yeah, and realistically, like, if you tell me McVay eventually will win a Super Bowl, okay, fine. He can scheme an amazing offense. He can do things, with the wide receivers. If you give him the tools, if you give his quarterback time, he can do some incredible things. That may be enough to eventually win some Super Bowl at some point in time. But he absolutely has to fix his game theory. Like, if you took McVay's scheming and, like, let's say Frank Reich's game theory, and you combine them to one coach, you would have the best coach in football, and it wouldn't be close, right? Like, that. Now you're getting into, like, the Belichick, Andy Reid territory in terms of, like, level of coaching, right? But he doesn't have the killer instinct. He doesn't really understand, what is plus EV in terms of decision making and sequencing and when to go for it sometimes, and it's going to hold the Rams back. So, talking specifically about rankings, at least for the Bucks and the Rams, I pretty much have them. Yeah, virtually indistinguishable right now. About 2% will win probability against an average team between the two teams. So, they're eventually effectively a wash. And really, you have two teams at the very top of the power rankings that are so clear of the field. It was wild. Kansas City, I have 8 points better than an average team on a neutral field right now, which at this point in the season, that's one of the higher rankings I have on any team going back many years, just because usually once you get, week 11, 12, you've had some regression for the best teams and some improvement for the worst teams, and things kind of start to bunch together. But still, the Kansas City Chiefs are a good 2.5 points better than the Pittsburgh Steelers right now in a neutral, which is wild because Steelers obviously undefeated. Jeez. They are the clear number two. I'm very excited for the potential to see, say, a Kansas City Pittsburgh AFC Championship game in Pittsburgh. That is going to be a very, very fun handicap because you're probably going to have Pittsburgh as a small home dog there, I would guess, just based on the market sentiment for Kansas City right now. After those two at the top, it is a mess. It is a mess. The next five teams from Seattle, Tampa Bay, Green Bay, Tennessee, Rams, all bunched within about 2% of each other in terms of win probability. So literally any of those teams go head to head, it's coin flip, even with home field advantage. So yeah. It is going to be fascinating to see who comes out of them. I forgot to mention the New Orleans Saints, obviously, too. They're absolutely in that mix. It's going to be fascinating to see, how we emerge here. Saints, obviously, inside track for the number one seed in the NFC. I would think that's going to matter this year, especially if, you have Drew Brees coming off of, these rib injuries. If you can give him an extra week of rest, with the only bye, and then if you can have him play indoors instead of having to go to Green Bay or somewhere like that, that's going to be massively huge. So these next couple of weeks with Taysom Hill at quarterback are going to be phenomenally important for New Orleans.
Yeah, and of course, only one team in the current format gets a bye in each conference this postseason. With the expanded format. Okay, let's do a little rapid fire here, and I'm just some musings that I came up with. I think I said most of these on Guessing Lines yesterday, but maybe not. And I'll just get your reaction on some of these. Philadelphia Eagles, are they the team that no matter what your numbers say, no matter what the personnel in place says, even if you think pre-flop they're the team to pick, you just are at the point now where you cannot trust them whatsoever?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, the last bet I made on the Eagles this season, maybe the last bet I make on Doug Peterson for life, was against the Giants 2 weeks ago. Peterson's, in my opinion, at least, they got to move on. I don't think he has control of, he's lost this locker room. He's lost the team. And they keep running Carson Wentz out there, even though Carson Wentz is playing at the lowest level of all starting quarterbacks right now. And it's not close.
Incredible.
It's not close. Yeah. Last 4 weeks, especially, it's absolutely crazy that this has devolved like this, because I think 3 years ago, it was the second season starting. He was 12 weeks into the season. The Eagles were like 11-1 at that point when he tore his ACL against the Rams. And he was clearly in the MVP discussion at that point in time. And you think, hey, from here, You know, you're trending up. You know, you're gonna continue to improve. You're gonna continue to learn NFL offense, learn how to be a quarterback in this league. But it has devolved so quickly, and I don't know why they continue to throw this guy out there. I mean, at this point, might as well try Hurts. At this point, you are losing your grasp on the NFC East, and you've kind of lost control of your own destiny too, because you've lost too many games in division at this point. So I don't think it's going to be enough for the Eagles just to circle a couple games on their calendar and say, hey man, if we can get to 6 wins, we got this, because the Cowboys are getting better. Washington football team's not, is no slouches now that they have a quarterback, and the Giants clearly on the upswing, over the last couple weeks especially. So everybody in that division is looking better than the Eagles right now, and it is wild that, 2 or 3 weeks ago I would have said, oh no, Eagles are going to cruise to this division win, and now I'm looking at it thinking, well, actually, you know what, they may finish last.
They should put that out on the Washington football team's motto. We are no slouch, Washington football team.
We used to be slouches, but not anymore.
Not anymore. Speaking of Washington, obviously the headline from that game, even though Washington won, Joe Burrow's knee, ACL, MCL, out for the season. Who knows when he'll be back next season. Let me ask you about this, because I don't think enough is being made of this. I'm not blaming the Cincinnati coaching staff for his injury. However, at some point, we've all been saying this all year, man, he's getting a lot of sacks. Man, he's dropping back a lot despite a really shoddy offensive line. If you're the Cincinnati Bengals, isn't there a bit of malpractice to this? Like, I get it. You didn't cause the injury, but you certainly didn't minimize the chances for a team that wasn't going anywhere anyway. Shouldn't you have like not had as many passes? Even in this game, he like had a full game stats before he got hurt.
Yeah, absolutely. Gil, this summer, you could probably go back and find the clip when we handicapped the offensive rookie of the year market. And I guarantee you, I said, there is no way you can tell me Burrow is a fair price at the top of this market, because I can't believe that he's going to stay healthy behind this offensive line.
We got to
find the idea that he was going to make 16 starts was a stretch. I mean, maybe if he had gotten 16 starts, clearly, yeah, he's got a great chance of winning offensive rookie of the year. But, he was behind the 32nd best offensive line coming into this season. The Zach Taylor offense was not affording him the same opportunities that a lot of these other young quarterbacks have of getting the ball out of his hands quickly. They're asking him to sit there and evade pressure and let the play develop downfield. And that's asking for trouble. And even after, you're absolutely right, he showed resilience. He showed toughness getting to this point in the season and, making all of the starts that he made. And it really did feel like a matter of time. And it does feel like malpractice on the part of the Bengals coaching staff. And honestly, I've seen enough out of Zach Taylor, to be honest. I'm ready to move on. I think Bengals absolutely ought to be considering their options for next season. And, if the Joe Brady experience is as good as it appears for the Carolina Panthers, and Joe Brady and Joe Burrow were such a perfect match made in heaven at LSU. I'm not sure why you're not thinking about upgrading your coaching position there and giving Joe Brady a call this offseason.
We'll get to Drew's picks here momentarily, I promise you. Drew is at @whale_capper on Twitter, hosts a podcast with his buddy Andy Molitor. It's the Deep Dive Podcast. Great stuff, and of course provides weekly rankings at Point Spread Weekly here at VSiN. A couple more questions. The Colts fans are going to hate me, by the way, by the time this is all done. Even in victory against the Titans a couple Thursday nights ago, they doubled up the Titans, and I went through this whole dissertation about Philip Rivers not sneaking, and that was his coming out party, coming out of the closet, if you will, about not sneaking. They even had to bring in Jacoby Brissett for a pinch sneak. So my point on all this is, they won, but on third and fourth and ones, the opposing defense doesn't have to plan for Philip Rivers. And now they know, by the way, when Jacoby Brissett comes in, they're going to be like, I think this is a sneak, everybody. Then on Sunday, they beat the Packers, and good for the Colts. They came back from 14 points down. They completely shut down the Packers. However, from the 217 mark in regulation to the 125 mark, so you're talking about a 52-second stretch, They had 5 holding penalties on offense.
Wow.
5. And they kept stopping the clock. So Green Bay ended up with a timeout in pocket. Basically, what I'm saying is the same thing with the Rams yesterday. The Colts basically were like, we could put this game away, but let's just increase the level of difficulty and make this easier for the Packers. And sure enough, Aaron Rodgers, even pinned back, was able to get the game tying field goal. Turnover in overtime allowed the Colts to be set up for a Rodrigo Blankenship game winner. But I guess what I'm saying with the Colts is, come postseason, is this the proverbial team where an Achilles heel, whether it's the sneak or something else, the inability to close out a game like that just comes back to nip them in the butt? And are they one of the, are they on a fade list for you, or do you think they're way better than most?
I definitely don't think they're way better than most. I don't understand the market support for them this week, to be honest. They have gotten bet up big time against Tennessee, and I think that's the wrong move. Tennessee and Indianapolis are very close to me by my numbers, and Thursday night 2 weeks ago, the final score was pretty broad. It mm-hmm. looked like a blowout, but you dig into it a little bit, and there were some key special teams plays on the part of the Colts. There was a couple high leverage fourth downs that went the Colts' way that didn't go the Titans' way, and I would expect a much better performance out of the Titans in this spot. So I think the Titans are a solid look this week. And the Colts are a suspect, absolutely. The problem is they could draw someone like the Miami Dolphins in the 3-7 matchup, which all of a sudden, Dolphins, I have to say, are probably the top of my list of teams that I'm ready to go against in the playoffs, especially on the road, especially if they're going with Tua. Just not enough out of that offense whatsoever in terms of being able to put pressure on teams. And you know, for all of the faults of Frank Reich's, you know, and Philip, I guess really Philip Rivers' limitations is what it comes down to more even so than Frank Reich's, his ability to craft an offense. But Frank Reich does some pretty outstanding things in terms of just in-game decision-making, in my opinion, when he's choosing to go for it, you know, when he understands leverage better than most of the other head coaches. He understands game theory better than most of the other head coaches. And those small edges do add up to wins over the course of the season. So the Colts are a tricky team, but this week I think the Titans are a play.
I'm on the Titans. That's one of the plays I loved on Guessing Lines. One of the lines where I looked at, I was like, well, really getting all those points?
yeah, right.
But I will say this about the Colts: that you know they don't have a game breaker on offense. It makes them a very sort of tricky team, sneaky team. To the eye. We'll come back. Drew's picks, or what he's bet already, let's put it that way. Week 12 of the NFL coming right back. We're here on A Numbers Game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
To A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Numbers Game brought to you by BetMGM Nevada. It's Gil Alexander. This just in from Adam Schefter. Thank you, Zane Denton, for alerting me to this. Adam Schefter, Cowboys announced they have canceled today's practice and Mike McCarthy's press conference today due to a non-COVID medical emergency. Yeesh. Hope everybody's all right over there.
Yeah.
That sounds like somebody, yeah.
Further reports to.
Sounds like somebody had a serious medical event. We can't speculate on that, but the Cowboys have shut down their practice today. This on the heels of the Ravens having a couple COVID positives yesterday. They had to temporarily shut down their practice facility yesterday. Listen, we don't mean to sound callous. This all comes from a betting perspective. So if you're just landing on the show for the first time and you're like, this guy's about to make a bet, is about to ask a betting question based on all this. I am. That's what we do. And we do hope for the health and safety of everybody. But Drew Densick, everybody from the Deep Dive podcast and his work at Point Spread Weekly, Whale_Capper. Drew, who do I pick in Survivor on Thanksgiving?
Oh my goodness.
Like, who do I
pick? Did you save all 6?
No, I don't have Pittsburgh. I have the other 5.
I think that's okay. I don't know if I love Pittsburgh this week, and I think they're probably going to be the top pick, at least on Thursday. I mean, everybody in Circus got to pick both, right? Thursday and Sunday?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. If you have Houston, I think you got to go Houston.
Really?
Houston's playing really well right now. And honestly, the Lions, not only does the Stafford thumb injury looks meaningful. He played extremely poorly on Sunday. But on top of that, you take Kenny Golladay out of this lineup and Stafford is a bottom five quarterback in the NFL nowadays. It's crazy what one player can mean to, the quarterback's performance. But, with Golladay in and on and off the field, the on-off stats are just unbelievably stark for Matt Stafford. So expecting Golladay not to be available on this one. Obviously, if Golladay is available, if Swift is available, it's a lot more difficult of a handicap. But regardless, Deshaun Watson, even in this totally lost season for the Houston Texans, where, they trade away his premier target, Bill O'Brien gets fired after 4 weeks. They bring in Romeo Crennel, who's a defensive minded guy. Even through all of this, Deshaun Watson is persevering and improving a lot of aspects of his play, capped off with a very, very clean game against the Patriots, I thought, in what was a pretty tricky spot. And granted, the Patriots don't get a ton of pressure. And, that's kind of the one Achilles heel for Deshaun Watson, where he is vulnerable to giving up, key sacks and key moments. And that really is kind of the only negative on his game. But now that you have, you're going up against some softer defenses that can't generate a pass rush, namely Patriots last week, Lions this week, I think Deshaun Watson's going to get his in this spot. The fact that it's under 3 points still doesn't make sense to me at all. The Lions are pretty clearly, playing like a 4 or 5 win team right now, whereas the Texans are playing more like an 8 win team. So I think it's fair that they're almost field goal favorites on the road here, especially given the Lions' injuries. And, realistically, the Lions have had a very poor secondary all season, although they have shown flashes from time to time. And they don't match up well against this Texans passing attack at all. I think Jeff Okuda has largely struggled to get his feet under him this season as a rookie, and Will Fuller is going to make it a very long day for him on Thanksgiving morning.
Did you bet Houston ATS? Is that one of your picks?
I have the opening under, and I'm going to take some Houston -2.5 today.
Okay. Boy, now you got me thinking. Yes, Jason. You want to say something, Jason?
I'm a survivor.
Oh, geez. No. You gotta time that better. It's like, wait, hold on.
We're working on the logistics.
It's only funny if you do it on your own. You don't stop the show for. We'll work on that, Drew. Sorry about that.
What was your original lean, by the way? Were you going to go Cowboys?
I have no lean. I have legit every week, and I was telling Jason this, because I'll go on the show and I'll do the whole, I don't know, maybe you should take Minnesota, right? I'll kind of mess around with people in the audience, and I've always known exactly who I'm going to pick every week. And this is the first one, this Thanksgiving quirk at Circa, where I legit do not know who to play. Even if Pittsburgh was available, I'm not sure I would play them. I certainly don't want to play Baltimore. Washington and Dallas, I mean, come on. Really? I mean, I got no lean here. And then Houston, Detroit is kind of where I gravitate towards. But Detroit kind of scares me on a Thanksgiving morning. I'll be honest with you. Like, Houston is no slam dunk, right? So, I don't know.
I can give you some reasons to take the Cowboys as an alternative, but they're not great.
Yeah. No. Yeah, I'll do that. I don't want to hear reasons for the Cowboys. That'd be the worst. Like, my boyhood team knocks me out of Survivor, and there Washington knocks out. I don't know. But you put up a good case for the Texans. Hang out, Drew, because we didn't get to your picks. Apologies.
Oh, sure thing. No problem.
Selfish question for me about Survivor. Coming back, Drew's picks, what he's bet so far, next, right here on the Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
To A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
The College Hoops Betting Guide, which we talked about this morning with Matt Eumanns, it's out today. Now's the perfect time to become a VSiN subscriber. Get the massive in-depth guide to all the teams, 452 pages. teams, conferences, impact players, all this for the unique college basketball season that 2020 ought to be. It has predictions, insights, pardon me, stats, and research from all our VSiN basketball experts, and you'll want to dive in before the first games tip off tomorrow. Get the Hoops Betting Guide plus everything VSiN has to offer every day of the basketball season and all year round at a 25% savings right now. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. Let me just add one tweet here at Beating the Book from Raj Bhatti about this. He said, thanks for the college basketball segment this morning. Need to pile on the kudos for Matt Eumanns and Greg Peterson. These guys are hard workers with an unparalleled depth and breadth of knowledge of the game. They also have a humility and self-awareness rarely seen in the industry. So shout out to everybody, Matt, Greg, and company who worked on that guide. Drew Dinsick is here, Whale_Capper, Deep Dive Podcast, Point Spread Weekly Contributor. Drew, what have you bet thus far in week number 12, sir?
Sides are tough this week. I really was surprised that there wasn't a whole lot popping on the opening lines for the sides. The one that stands out and maybe my only like real solid look this week is going to be the Tennessee Titans. I'm in it now at +4, pretty substantial position. I think the Titans and the Colts match up extremely well with each other, and I can see this being a very, very close contest. So I'm going to get the 4 points there and expect that one to that's the team with the ball last, field goal wins type of game. As far as I handicap it. Other than that, I have a feast of overs. I'm looking for a feast of points this week for Thanksgiving. I think the only, I guess I played the over in the Chargers Bills game. That's gotten bet down this morning. So there may be someone who has an angle on weather potentially, because that was 55 when I woke up and now it's 53. So somebody thinks that under is good. But I got in on the over at 52 on Sunday, which I thought was, you know, was a very favorable price. May get that again. These are two relatively strong functioning offenses against, subpar defenses the way I handicap this game. I think this is going to be a shootout barring some massive wind or weather situation. I have overs. I think the over is very interesting in Denver. The Denver New Orleans game sets up, I think, well for an over. I think the over is very interesting in my page crashing on me 40, here.
43.5, really
43
low.
And a half. Yeah, really quite low on that one. The one other one that I had popping was Arizona New England sets up well for an over also. I think Arizona's offense matches up really well against this New England defense, especially the fact that New England, this is, you know, their season's pretty much over. That they got eliminated more or less losing to Houston last week, and I think both teams, you know, are going to be able to get theirs on offense there. So I'd make fair price on this one, 51. So 49 was an overplay for me in Cardinals Patriots.
I'll tell you the three ones for guessing lines yesterday that jumped out to me. Tennessee against Indianapolis, as you said also. Tennessee was one of them. The other one was Kansas City. I thought that was too low at Tampa Bay even before yesterday. I thought that was too low. And then the third one was, I like Arizona at New England, giving 2.5. Those are the three that jumped out to me. I don't know how you feel about those.
Yeah, I came close to pulling the trigger on that 2.5. In the end, I opted to go for the over in that game, but I could make the case either way. I mean, the Cardinals, they were a few inches away from tying that game against Seattle on Thursday night, where they got, you know, they reasonably got outplayed for most of that game, but they still were in it.
That was
Murray is playing at a high level.
That was another strange sequence. I'm sorry to interrupt, Drew. That was another strange, like, high leverage sequence where, you know, Arizona got all the way downfield relatively quickly. They still had 55 seconds left and two timeouts. I think they randomly used one casually after that, but they had plenty of time. First and 10 of the 27, and then they were like, all right, if we're going to tie this, let's give Russell Wilson as much time as humanly possible left on the clock. Let's just heave it into the end zone a couple times. It was the weirdest thing. I don't know what these teams think in these moments. It's like they lose their minds. They have no sense of context.
Yep. Yeah, Cliff Kingsbury is another one of these guys. You know, the young offensive-minded guru who's come into this league and has a good scheme or a good sequencing of play calls in their back pocket, but doesn't understand game theory is just mind-blowing. Like these guys, if they just spent like one offseason and went to like the Ernie Adams School of like plus EV. How to call a game, like they would be so much more dangerous as head coaches. And if I was a general manager with power and I had one of these young guys, I would really push hard to get them to broaden their minds from an analytics standpoint, because if you have Kyler Murray or if you have as dynamic an offense as Sean McVay has, you need to be calling things a little more aggressively.
Yeah, we did this fruit basket segment on Primetime Action last night. We got to get you on there too at on MSG Plus, where we give away virtual fruit baskets to players that helped us win bets, if you will, over the weekend. And I gave mine out to Braxton Berrios of the New York Jets, who I had the Chargers. You know where I'm going with this. I had the Chargers in Survivor, and I kind of forgot about the game. And then every time I glanced over, the Jets were getting closer and closer. I was like, what's going on here? Am I about to get Anthony Lynn? And finally, the Jets had the ball with a chance to get eight. You know, they only needed 6 points and a 2-point conversion to tie it. The Chargers were able to stop them, so I'm like, okay, good, we got this. And the Chargers ended up with the ball up eight with 7 seconds left, and I'm like, okay, let's see how they can mess this up. And they decide, okay, we're going to tell our punter Ty Long to just run it to the back of the end zone and run it out, and we'll get the safety and this game will be over. Well, they didn't tell him to run out the whole clock apparently, because they got the safety but there's 1 second left, and I'm like, oh my god, I'm gonna have to endure a punt. And so Ty Long, he punts it to, and Braxton Berrios of the Jets gets it and like forgets to lateral the ball to anybody. And I'm just like, thank you, Braxton Berrios. Like, what is there's an epidemic of that too, all of a sudden, where you're seeing guys like just caving on plays that should go long. I'm like, I don't get it. So that was interesting as well. These guys, late game decisions in the NFL are mind blowing.
2020 has been tough on these guys, I guess, they've all lost their minds, but that was a hell of a flak door by the Jets there.
Yes. By the way, if I had these players' addresses, I would absolutely send the fruit basket to them. I would love to just see their reaction when they get these from bettors. Like, what is this? And who is this? What did I do wrong? Drew, can't thank you enough. So again, it's to review, you are on Tennessee, and then overs in the Chargers Buffalo game, Arizona New England game, and the third was
New Orleans Denver.
There we go.
43.5.
Very low for a total in today's modern day NFL, that's for sure. Thank you, Drew. Appreciate it as always, man.
Happy Thanksgiving. Appreciate you guys, and best of luck this week.
You too. Happy Thanksgiving indeed. Drew Dinsick at @whale_capper, Deep Dive Podcast, and of course here at Point Spread Weekly. Coming back, Las Vegas Chris. What could we do with Circus Survivor next year? Some potential rule changes or suggested ones next, right here on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
To A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
New BetMGM customers have a chance to win $100 in free bets when they place a $1 wager on any Thanksgiving Day football game and a touchdown is scored in any of the games played that day. Sign up and use bonus code VSIN100 to take advantage of the offer. Get ready for showtime. Download the app today and use promo code VSIN100 to win $100 if a touchdown is scored on Thanksgiving, any of the three games. New customer offer, paid in free bets. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. Colorado, Indiana, New Jersey, Nevada, Tennessee, and West Virginia only. Please gamble responsibly. And if you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado and Nevada. 1-800-GAMBLER in New Jersey and West Virginia. In Tennessee, call or text the red line at 800-889-9789. And if you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. Promotional offer, not available in Nevada. Skill Alexander. There you go. Skill Alexander. Jason Kahn, responsible for all background noises as well. Whenever you can put Destiny's Child in the show, it's a good thing. My next guest is one of my favorite people in all of Las Vegas. We agree on nothing politically, but I love him so. It's Las Vegas Chris, everybody. A winner of, let me get this right, 2016 College Football Station Casino's Last Man Standing contest. Defeated over 2,500 competitors, $52,000. Win Eliminator, $100,000. Palms in 2011. Station's Last Man Standing College Football, as I mentioned, in 2016. He wins it all. It's Las Vegas Chris. How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty well.
What are you in this year? You didn't do Survivor?
I didn't do Survivor just because I don't like to have to do something I have to plan out the whole year ahead of time. I don't think people realize how much work is involved just to come up with 1 week's games.
Yeah.
I mean, if anybody knew how much time I spent keeping up with injuries and weather and team dynamics and line predictions and such and just coming up with the models I use and updating my data and tweaking, it's a lot of hard work and Survivor takes a lot of planning and you're competing against so many people that already know how to, you know, plot this stuff in their models and there's going to be a lot of similarities. I thought with so many people you'd have a good chance of tying.
A lot of us are very veteran Survivor players, that's for sure. You are in what, though, this year?
I did the Circa Millions.
How are you doing in that?
Oh, I'm doing very well.
Oh.
Yeah.
Care to share how well or just very well?
Well, last year I had two entries, and I finished 20th and 31st, and only one of my entries is worse than that currently.
Oh, and how many entries do you have?
Two.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Wow. You're good. Okay. So you're not in Last Man Standing? Or you were?
I was in Last Man Standing, and I flamed.
Oh, that's not a good story.
No, the wife missed the deadline, I had to change to afternoon games, and it didn't go very well.
Was that a difficult conversation?
Yes, it was.
Okay, to Chris's wife, I apologize for bringing it up. I forgot. I said it out loud before I could think of it through. But you still have one entry in it, or no?
No, I'm out of Station's Last Man Standing, which is a very underrated contest. They need to market that better.
You know what? You know, I said this on air. I consider myself a fairly intelligent human being. I went to Station's. I gave them $100 for my five entries, and I forgot to even do it week one.
One of my Circa entries, I wish I could have the timestamp. There's no timestamps on the app of when you submit. I set my alarm a little bit too early, and I actually put 1 week's picks in at exactly 3. I'm like, I was so late.
Oh,
I'm like,
man.
Please just let me get in the one that I'm really doing well in. I don't even care about the second one.
Right.
So,
and you got it in just under the gun.
It was that close.
I earlier in the season, I got pretty late to before 3 o'clock. Like people are making, you know, maybe justifiably because these are all $1,000 a piece, but it is. People have lives. People do other things. And it's been amazing how many people have, even this week for Survivor, 4 people didn't get it in. All right. So you're a good guy to ask this question. Yesterday, you just put out this tweet, which you entitled 2021 Circa Survivor Musings. And your thoughts are, I'll let you go through these one by one.
Well, the first thing I put, first of all, kudos to Circa. Okay. They're doing everything great. So, my musings are by no means criticism of anything that they're doing, because it's great contest. But just looking at it, the format of Survivor really dictates you have to buy maximum entries. Anybody that only buys one or two entries,
my biggest mistake,
is at a huge deficit.
You're right,
and it's not reasonable. Okay, 5 is too many. So I would bring the number of entries down to either max 2 or 3 entries with an option of raising the price to kind of make it a little bit more prestigious and to recoup, the whole, dollar pool that's going to be in there so that you don't see a huge drop. You're going to have many more people enter next year anyway as it is. So if you drop the maximum entries down to 3, you're not going to see a big shift. So, raising $1,000 is perfect. I mean, you don't have to. It's just a suggestion. But that's the problem.
I like where you're going with this, though.
You can't be competing with anybody with a brain is going to buy the maximum number of entries. You have to.
Well, I didn't have a brain, apparently, prior to this. I really didn't. I was like, I'm going to do 2 of Millions. I'm going to do 2 of Survivor. And I quickly realized what a mistake that was.
And, I really love the think outside the box idea they had with the Thanksgiving week. And that was great to be able to do that. But let's be serious. You're in this contest for 11 weeks, and now you have a format change. And well-intended, I don't think that that was a wise move. And then let's look at the rules here. If they do not play on Thursday, and you pick that game, any reason, even if they move it to the next day, you lose.
That would be brutal.
Now there is a line in the rules that is kind of vague that would kind of allow Circa, because they've got the final decision, so to speak, to maybe step in and make some emergency proclamation to kind of caveat or something if something like that happened. But regardless, that has to change. And it changes the whole flow of the contest.
It does. You just have to sort of accept it. What I've said all year is I can plan everything before Thanksgiving. I can plan everything after Thanksgiving. But Thanksgiving is a wing and a prayer.
One of my suggestions is also to, because you would be eliminated if your games aren't played by Tuesday or this week by on Thursday.
Yep.
I don't think that that's, let's find a workaround on it. And you may not even be able to do it every week, but where possible, if something like that happens, an act of God or something along that nature, or a tie game, like a real tie game, I think is kind of unfair. Submit two picks the following week.
Just some sort of contingency for
some
a tie
sort
game.
Of contingency that allows people. I don't like the station's method, last man standing. If those events happen, you automatically advance. So
you get through
right
on an ATS contest.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, but if the game's canceled, you go through.
Here's the one in the middle that we skipped over. Two picks per week, first few weeks.
I think this is awesome. If they take one idea, they have to do this one. And that is, you can't end the season with people tied. That's just, that's not American. It's not American.
And this from a guy, you have brokered final groups of people in Last Man Standing. You've gotten them together so they could actually talk
right,
to each other.
Right, right. But
because Stations wasn't helping out on that. You had to do
it. Well, but to be fair, when we won the win contest, we went, we begged and pleaded to find out who the other guy was. And we finally met him on the very last day when the contest. So we weren't able to make a deal. So it actually was a good deal. But here it is. And it's so simple. Whoever's tied, now you have a slight format change, the tiebreaker, equated to overtime. It can't be exactly the same, obviously. Let's just go forward, line every game on the half point, so there's no ties, and each person picks one game against the spread, losing, you're out.
Talking about the first week of the playoffs?
Yeah, and all the way to the Super Bowl.
But that's a format change too, right?
It is, but it's like overtime in college football.
Yeah.
Do you want 100 people to tie or 50 people to tie, or would you like?
Yeah, it's too many.
Could you imagine the publicity it's going to get when you get? Let's just say you had 30 people going into the playoffs. It's going to even add more excitement to the contest.
Oh, it would be amazing. It would totally be amazing. But about the two picks per week thing, first couple few weeks of the season. Most survivor pools that I'm familiar with or have participated in my life, obviously before Circa, they would do that, say, week 11, week 12, week 13, like deeper into the season. They'd say, okay, you all got this far. Now a couple survivor picks. You prefer to do it at the beginning of the year or you don't care?
Oh, no, I didn't think about it that hard.
Okay.
I mean, I was just trying to bring up the obvious,
Don't get me wrong, Gil.
Consider.
I didn't really put much thought into
it. For that particular
I
thing,
yeah.
You're bringing up something that's really interesting. I think that would really make things difficult.
Oh, yeah, because you got to plan super duper at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all very interesting, and it's all so much fun. This has been, I keep saying it, Chris, no matter what I'm doing, my bets, other things I do in life, my brain keeps going back to Survivor. There's something specific about Survivor because it's so simple on the surface, but so much planning, as you say, has to go into it beyond that. And there's all kinds of strategies. Do you do you play it the safe way? I've been famous to say, I think it's a misnamed game. It's called Survivor, but the object's not to survive. The object is to win. So at what point do you go to game theory? And if you have multiple entries, there's many strategies you can use. But if you only have one, at what point do you play the team that's off, you know, that's not going to be the most popular? There's all kinds of things you have to consider. And these are all very interesting suggestions. And I would imagine that they're paying attention to this talk right now, and they're not going to commit to anything, but these will be up for consideration.
Oh, you know, everything needs a little tweaking at something, and I think Circa is doing so many things very well, and I actually have a few suggestions I'm trying to get to them for maybe adding, if they're interested, you know, something that might be quite interesting also.
Well, let's see what happens. Have a meeting with them. We can broker that meeting. Las Vegas, Chris, thanks. I wish we could spend more time, man. Appreciate it as always.
It's fun.
It's all fun. Good luck with all your bets. We'll see you tomorrow right here from Visa, the Sports Betting Network. I'm a survivor.